basketball, conditioning the mind, body, and spirit. It takes practice, commitment, vision, goal setting, determination, sharp focus, respect, and discipline. Once you learn it, you can apply it to all aspects of your life. The Warrior's Mindset prepares you for the largest competition ever, the competition against self.
Okay, everybody, Willie the Bam Johnson here with the Warrior's Mindset. We know that the Warrior's Mindset is all about adapting and flowing and doing our very best, doing whatever we can do by digging down deep inside of ourselves, overcoming all the obstacles and pitfalls that we face in the world today. Anybody that we bring on this radio show, they are people that are using that same universal concept of the Warrior's Mindset. They are living examples of taking the martial arts principles beyond the martial arts industry and systems and concepts, but to the world and to the people. You know, so what we want to do is get started, introduce you, and tell the people, first of all, let's get a good early morning to everybody. You got to say something.
Oh, is this filmed or is this audio?
No, it's both. It's two. It's audio and talk to me.
All right. Hey, everybody. I'm honored to be here. This is such a pleasure to be hanging out with the legend, Willie the Bam Johnson. I've been following your career, you know, for a long time. So it's an incredible honor.
Well, same here. Let's start off before we go into the show. Give the students and the parents and the fans and everybody out there that's listening to this, give them an intro, because that resume you sent me, man, was so extensive. I can't read the whole thing. Give a little intro of yourself and talk to them.
All right. Well, my name is Conrad Bowie, and I call myself a man. Martial arts nerd, M-A-N. And so I like that word nerd because, you know, sometimes there's a stereotype when you do martial arts, you know, they think, oh, hey, this is some tough guy and he's all about violence. But when I'm able to put the word nerd behind it, it helps to calm some nerves. You know, it's funny. I'm out here in San Francisco and people are very peaceful out here. There's a certain group that's very peaceful. They hate any type of violence. And so sometimes I have told people, you know, my hobby, I love doing martial arts. And I could just see they take a step back from me. They think I might jump them at any second or something, but they don't realize that martial artists, you know, we're some of the coolest people, the most peaceful people out there. But I started in martial arts back in the late 70s from watching a martial arts movie of Bruce Lee. And I started learning from my father in Aikido when I was about 8 years old. And that was a long time ago. After that, I jumped into Taekwondo. I've been an instructor in Taekwondo for quite a while. My teacher is Sensei Troy McCaskill. He was a point fighting champion, and he was one of my heroes. He's, you know, African American. He was black, super awesome guy, you know. And right there, it's already getting diverse, you know, as far as the diversity of the teachers I have. After that, you know, it was the Jeet Kune Do era in the 80s. Everyone was, you know, the ninja era just ended in the late 80s, and in the late 80s, early 90s, Jeet Kune Do was kind of popular. So I started looking into that. I trained in Jeet Kune Do for a while, and eventually getting my instructor certification in that. And during that time, Guru Dan Inosanto, he was talking a lot about Silat. And so I really want to learn Silat. And after college, I went to a chiropractic college, and there was a Silat instructor that was also a clinician at the college. And oh man, I was like, whoa, my gosh, I can't believe this. And it was the exact same Silat system that Guru Dan Inosanto was learning, Silat Sarak. And I was like, just in hog heaven, I couldn't believe my luck. And that teacher, is Dutch Indonesian, and there's so martial arts is just such a wide variety of cultures. So after I graduated from chiropractic college, I was lucky enough to head back to Colorado. My chiropractic college was in San Jose, California. And so I moved back to Colorado, and that's where I originally grew up, was in Colorado. And so my CELOT instructor, Dr. Andre, he said, hey, you know, if you want to learn some more CELOT, there's an instructor there that's very well known in Colorado. And he made some introductions, and I became a student of Willem de Torres, one of the de Torres brothers. And they were pioneers of CELOT in the US, Paul de Torres, Victor de Torres, Willem de Torres. And I became a student of his, and I'm still a student of his right now. It's going on 20 something years. And man, he's in his mid 80s and he moves like someone in their 30s. It's just incredible. And Uncle Bill is Dutch Indonesian as well too. And at that time, I also started learning Bagua Zhang and Xing Yi Tai Chi from one of his close friends, Sigung Wayne Welsh. And then after about 15 years of practice in chiropractic, my family and I, we moved to San Francisco, California. And then I found a Muay Thai gym close to my my home, and I've been a student there, and now I teach there. I've been there going on 15 years, as well as they had Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I always wanted to learn that, and that was amazing. And so I started there too. I've been in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for about 12 years now, and I compete as a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So I'm a martial arts nerd. I love martial arts. I'm also a part of the gun community as well too. I've written articles in Recoil magazine, a Concealment magazine, as well as Off-Grid magazine on firearms and firearm defense and things like that too. And so I'm part of that world, and I want to say the firearms world is very welcoming to people of color and ethnicity, minorities like us. And so that's another incredible world I'm a part of as well too.
So the awesome thing is, I guess when you come to teach a super fighter this year, you're gonna be teaching CELOT, right?
CELOT is awesome. I love CELOT.
I'm putting you out there on the radio show. Guaranteed that you're gonna be teaching CELOT at the seminar this year. All right?
It would be my honor. Thank you so much, Pastor.
All right, so as I'm listening to your story, we talk about the warrior's mindset. And the beautiful thing when we even agreed to do this interview, we talked about how we both are doing similar things when it comes down to combative expressions of martial arts to other people. But, I mean, when you said, man, let's talk about, you know, the elephant in the room, you know, the thing that only courageous people are willing to talk about in certain positions, and most people want to act like it don't exist. And that's talking about the devastation of the race card right now that's going on, you know, for many minorities in, you know, around the world, you know, and even the things that are, you know, affecting women. I mean, I was at an interesting seminar yesterday, and once again, I'm just communicating here, people, so don't take it wrong, and this is not a political thing, it's just a discussion. But, you know, the guy at the 10X seminar, he was just talking about how, you know, first of all, women harder than everybody else, and then minorities have it harder than everybody else. So if we were talking about a race, starting off in a race, he said what happens is that there's one race that's already get a head start. They already up there front and center. Then the women get a little head start beyond the minorities. And then the minorities get the third string of start. He said, when they say go, there is no way that the person in second and third can even have a equal chance to win that race. They always running this race behind. How would you describe that in your own words about that analogy right there?
Just what you said, this is a big elephant in the room. And, you know, this is kind of a faux pas to have a discussion. Like if you're at a party or something, right? Yeah. This is something pretty deep. And I'm so happy to have this opportunity to talk to you about a subject like this that is very, you know, has so many layers to it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I like the analogy. You know, it is true. Some people, they do, when that starting gun is fired, you know, they're back there, and it is hard. I think, you know, I had to look this up. I was like wondering, what is the exact definition of racism? And I want to read this just so that I don't get anything wrong. It's just defined as an unequal distribution of power on the basis of race. And so the unequal distribution of power, and that you know, but we see that like sometimes in housing, in job opportunities, in the way, maybe even the way police might treat us, things like that. And so, yeah, I definitely think it's there. And just like what you said, it's a discussion. We're not being political or anything like that. It's just a discussion. And I think having more of these discussions brings more light into the subject. And the more light we can get on a certain subject, the better that subject can become, the brighter it can become for the victims within that subject, that dark subject. So yeah, talking about it in a respectful, intelligent way, I think is one of the solutions to bring more light into this dark area.
And you know, it's interesting because I think, you know, in my new documentary, I talk about when I was a kid, I used to always be afraid of, I didn't like how I look, you know? And I think that was embodied in the things that were influencing me, because when I was looking at TV, while I was looking around, I felt like, you know, that was when I had hair. So I used to straighten my hair, you know, I wanted to be, whatever reason, I lacked self-esteem and how I felt about myself and what I was seeing, a replica of myself. And I didn't realize that there was this, you know, this inner uncomfortability about myself as a kid, you know. And thank God that I went to the movie and seen Chinese Connection, because when I seen Bruce Lee, and who I didn't even realize that he was fighting against the same issue that we're talking about right now. But what I registered with him was somebody that was standing up against the, in Black exploitation films, they call it the man. He was standing up against the man, you know. He was this heroic figure, man, and his energy and all of that stuff made me believe that I didn't see Bruce Lee anymore. I see me, because everything that we were more alike than different. But I didn't know that as a kid, because it was like a subconscious thing. I mean, and I think that helped me to begin to start not putting myself down. I started finding love through Bruce Lee, through Chinese Connection. I mean, how does that even register to you? I mean, what's your take on that?
You know, it's funny you say that, because it was very similar to me. And I want to circle back after I explain my background on it and ask you a few questions about that. But yeah, I was a kid growing up in Aurora, Colorado in the 80s. Man, that was like about 5 Asians in that whole school. Trust me, I felt the same way you felt. And so, and 2 of those 5 Asians were my brothers and sisters, you know, and I felt out of place. You know, I felt like the ugly duckling. And yeah, you know, I had issues too, self-confidence issues. And you know, when you're a high school kid or a middle school kid, the one thing you want is to fit in, and I could never fit in. That was impossible. No matter what clothes I wore or how I talked or how I walked or what sports I did, there's just no way I've ever felt that I completely fit in. I'm curious, where did you grow up in, and what are some situations where you felt like you weren't part of that group?
Well, I mean, I grew up in the city of Baltimore. I guess a lot of that was self-imposed, that like inner hate towards myself. Maybe that's how I looked at it at that time. Growing up in the city back then in the 70s and especially in because I was born in 64. So we talking about, I started really identifying with a conscious awareness of my surroundings in the 70s. But the 70s was a great era, man. That was the end of, like, you know, segregation. So the communities that what we call inner cities now, they were beautiful places. They were, you know, I hate to say it. I mean, I hate to say it. It's strange to be saying this. I mean, we played with the police. I mean, they would give us money to go and get their soft drinks. And, you know, we would hang around and talk and they would tell us all the trouble. I mean, everybody got along. I mean, we played, even though we were in the projects, we were taken to Little Italy, which is right across the street to play baseball. You know, so it wasn't really a racial thing. My dad brought me up, even though my dad is like 80 years old. So you can imagine what he's seen. He said that every man needs to treat every man with respect. So he made me push past that. You know, I guess at that time, I didn't really recognize it or called it like racism because I didn't feel that. I mean, I hate to say it. I didn't feel it. I just felt like everybody was getting along. I mean, you can go down to downtown Baltimore, didn't matter your race. We all got along. We treated people. The key thing was if you treated me with disrespect, that was far worse than what we call now, I guess, this racial issue. But that's sad because people look at Baltimore and you're like, oh man, it's so, no, Baltimore was not like that. You could leave your door unlocked. You could, you know, we could share frozen cups. We can play on the playground. Nobody got shot. You know, that came when the crack era came.
Wow.
That's when that happened. And I think, and I'm gonna throw something at you. I think what really changed for me as that consciousness was when in the 80s, when that crack epidemic hit our city, I resorted back to realize that in Godfather, they said, send all the drugs to the Black community. I didn't catch that as a kid when I was watching that TV show. Are you following me here?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. So it was things going on around me, but because I was a kid, I wasn't really conscious of it until I became older. And now I realize that things were put in place like crack. You know, I mean, I got in trouble for fighting the police. I mean, and I'm not saying policemen are bad, but I got in trouble because, you know, these certain systems were set in place in those communities to lock up people like me, to send me away. I mean, I used to think that I would never make it past 18. That was my statistic when I was coming up. I mean, so I guess now, even now, man, I mean, I guess the issue is there, but I try to look past it because I love me enough to not let you determine the outcome of what I'm going to be it don't matter what. I mean, Black man, whatever man. I mean, we all are human beings, like the martial arts teachers. We are human beings in the martial arts. As long as we sweating and practicing, race and sexism should never come up. If it does, then that means you're not concentrating on the technique at hand, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to admit that you're absolutely correct about certain things that are happening in the culture and that puts a certain group of people behind the curve before they even start. So that's definitely something that happened there. And I want to get back to the whole Bruce Lee thing too. And also, talking about back in the 70s when Bruce Lee had to face racism himself, and as well as being stereotyped as an Asian and everything like that. And I think he put that out in his movies quite a bit. We see a little bit of it in Return of the Dragon. We see a little bit and a lot of it in Chinese Connection, where you have to break that sign, you know, because there's no Chinese and dogs allowed in a certain area. And so, and then talking about, you mentioned your father as well too. So, I think back in the 60s, 70s, there was a lot more of that segregation, that racism. And I can't even imagine going back to the 40s. I just recently read in a firearms magazine about this Black gentleman. He was a medical doctor and he had to defend his family against a lynch mob. And this was in the 1940s, I think 44, if I'm not mistaken. And so he fired into the mob because they were attacking his house and they were throwing bricks in his house and everything. And someone from his inside his house fired into the mob and the bullet killed somebody. And excuse me. And from what I remember reading that they were found innocent. They were protecting their lives. Because back then, my gosh, could you imagine this? They actually burnt a black man, set him on fire. And that was the thing back then. Oh my gosh. So my point is, there is improvement. There is improvement from the 1940s to the 2020s. Thank goodness there is improvement. And so looking forward, let's look forward 20, maybe even 40 years. What kind of improvement do you think will continue to happen?
Well, I think for me, and which is really important, and this is your discussion, it's sad that I had to go to jail to learn my history, okay? And I'm gonna say that again. It's sad that I had to go to jail to learn my history. It wasn't until I got locked up that I understood that we were kings and queens. Okay. Well, even when I went to China, I got a chance to understand. When I got a chance to go to China and train in Wushu, when the Great Wall first opened up and allowed us to come over and train in the early 80s, I mean, you could see how they treated me with respect because I didn't know that there were black monks in the Shaolin Temple. These are stories that people don't tell us about. I didn't know that there was a cultural exchange between African warriors and Chinese warriors and Filipino warriors. I didn't know all of that. But, when I went to China, I was treated like royalty. I was treated like a hero. I was treated better in China than what I was treated in my own neighborhood. So when I got locked up and I realized that my problems were of my own making, it was lack of education. It wasn't no one else. It was lack of education. We never taught history based upon, a guy said it yesterday, and it's not me. When I was listening to the Grant Cardone said it, this guy was really powerful. He said, look, you got to remember, there's a group of people that was robbed of their religion, stripped of their race, and they were forced to come over here. And they were pounded on not remembering what they come from. And they only worked for free labor, and they built this whole country. And now you're saying, okay, now let them go and make up for what we did to them. This man said, there's no way you can make up for that. First of all, you robbed them of their language, you robbed them of their race, you robbed them of everything. I didn't learn that in school. I learned about cotton fields and stuff. That's what I learned. How did I have to go to jail and realize it? Oh, no, you were kings. You were queens. What are you doing, man? And then I think what really hit me was when I started reading the Bible for my own consciousness, and it was saying how, sometimes you got to go through darkness to find light. Moses had to go to, he murdered someone. We all are spiritual messages in our own way. God created us in his own image. Sometimes you were taught to not say that. Come on, man. I'm not trying to be funny. We came up, there was the Jesus in my house was a blonde hair and blue eyes. That was the Jesus on the wall. I'm not saying anything bad. So I remember somebody said, certain things. I mean, think about this. This is a funny joke, though, that I laugh about it. How do you go to Africa and a man gets lost in Africa? And the people that was living in Africa are being murdered by the animals, but the man who was lost is talking to the animals. He becomes the hero in a foreign land where the people who was raised and created the land are dying because we were made to psychologically believe this. So for me, that self-education to know that it wasn't someone else, it was my lack of knowledge. Everything that I do now is to educate self. I just, it's not to be, I'm beyond all that. I don't, it's humanity. long as you treat me with respect, we good. You know, I didn't encounter things, but I still go back to look at what role did I play in? When I got in a fight with a policeman, what role did I play in? Well, I deserved that time because I was doing a crime. So he had a right to be fearful and feel the way he felt. And, you know, I deal with the consequences. Was it, could it have been prevented? Did when I was living in the project, should I have been given ID to get in my house? Think about this. Think of projects represent the prison system. If you really look at how the projects are built, they are preparing you for a jail cell. Am I making sense here?
That's just a very difficult situation to get out of, you know, your upbringing. So I have a couple things to say. Back to your story of the Shaolin monk who was black. I've seen those murals. It's like, it's so cool. They do honor. You know, they do honor. And yeah. You know, as a martial artist, anytime I teach like what you say, you know, it's not about race and the color of your skin. It, for me, it's always, I'm just so fascinated by whoever wants to learn. And I think back in Asia, there was a big fascination with people from outside our culture trying to learn things of our culture. And we appreciated that, you know, and that's probably why they treated you like a king. I know there was a samurai in Japan in the 1500s, I think the late 1500s, maybe 1570. And he, I think if my memory serves me correctly, in 1579, he landed in Japan through some Portuguese routes and trade. And they made him a samurai, a bona fide samurai. And the brother wore a katana and he joined him in battle and everything. You know, so and from what I remember, the daimyo, the warlord who took him in as a retainer, was just so fascinated by this person. He originally thought that this person had ink on his skin and he made the guy try to wash it off. And he had the guy stripped down to make sure that it was everything. And it just so fascinated him, the warlord, that he's like, yeah, I want this this person as a retainer, as a samurai in my army. And I want his advice and things like that, too, because I think, you know, smart people, they recognize that there is power in diversity, you know, and power in seeing things from other people's point of view.
That's the warrior's mindset, right?
Yes, the warrior mindset. And I can imagine back in the 1500s, this person from Africa made this journey all the way to Japan or China, learn the language, become part of that culture. Man, these guys were studs. I can't imagine back then, you know, because you're going there and you have no clue what this culture, because back then there was no communication, there was no TV, no radio, no internet. You have no clue what this culture's like. Are they gonna cut your head off? You know, you don't know. And so these guys, I can't imagine, they were bona fide studs, you know.
And it's interesting, think about it. I think, you know, sometimes, to me, it's still the same thing as a level. Maybe I might be wrong, but when I look at things that are uncomfortable, like racism or ego or manipulation and all these things that suppress people, I look at it as a level of immaturity and insecurity. Because you are so immature, because secure people and strong people don't suppress people. Because we realize that iron sharpens iron. So if I build you up and make you better, that's what we learn on the streets. It, the truth in its most purest form is for everybody to come together and fight together through adversity. That's what the truth is. I mean, when we look, anybody that's against the reality of the struggle and trying to fight against it, they just stupid. You understand? Think about that. Everything against you is destroying us as a people, and yet you choose to be disengaged from trying to get to the other side of the struggle. That makes no sense. Or you trying to turn people against each other, but that's a level of insecurity. That's ignorance. That's your own personal ignorance. So for me, what I look at is that what I try to do is understanding who I am as a person. We understand that martial arts is the most universal form of expression there is, because it doesn't deal with any of that. We get on the floor. Fatigue makes cowards of all of us. We don't care what your race is. You know what I'm saying? You on the floor, we working out, and you get tired. Fatigue, I don't care what your color is. But we seen that in war. When adversity comes and you dying, look who was reaching that hand down. It didn't matter about color, race. It's when we get back to some level of comfort and we really got to deal with our own inner beings, our inner self, that we begin to try to judge and hurt. And we can change that. We are changing that. You know, my dad, who I said is 80 some years old, he never say nothing bad. You can't even talk about racism around my dad. He like, look, don't be talking about that man. I don't care what you think about him. That man showed me respect. That man treated me like I was a human being, you know, and he laughs. He's saying, and when I sold that man moonshine, we went in his house and drunk some of his moonshine. And when he passed out, I went to the back and stole his moonshine. That's my little dad said. He said, and then I sold it to the next man down the street, you know. But, you know, I think, see, when we have God, man, God made us all equal. You know, we were born in different places. It can change, you know. And we as martial artists, when we become combative warriors, we believe in the art of fighting without fighting. I'm not going to fight you because you hate me. That's your own problem. You know, I want to make, I got locked up and went to jail for fighting the police. Now I teach police. I work with police. I believe the problem is that we got to understand. Now, I'm going to ask you this question. Let's talk about police. Let's talk about anybody in authority. When someone in authority tells you to take a chill pill, let me talk to you, and you still going up, that's like you being a teacher and you telling the student attention. And they're like, well, why do I have to come to attention? What are you saying? I have my own rights. Come on, man. I shouldn't have to stand right here. How do you explain that?
Wow. Oh, my gosh. You know, it's so deep what you just talked about. You know, I think what you said, a lack of education, you know, it comes down to not understanding everyone has their own perspective. Everyone has a different viewpoint. And we, as somebody with a lack of education, they look at another person's viewpoint and they can't understand it. You know, there isn't that compassion there. You know, the police have it tough. The kids in the projects have it tough. Both sides need to understand that. You know, it's not just, I'm a cop and these kids are all bad. Well, no, you know, some of these kids were just born there. They're not all bad, you know, or maybe they're the kid in the project thinking all cops are jerks. Well, no, not all cops are jerks. Believe it or not, there's a few out there that really want to change things. And the majority of them are really good people. They have families to come home to, kids to take care of. And, you know, it just takes a few rotten apples to spoil it for everybody. You know, and so that lack of compassion, what you would have called, that lack of education, compassion, education, looking at it from another person's viewpoint. I think that's something, but it is hard to do. It's not easy to do to say, oh, hey, you know, Mr. Police Officer, I know you have it tough. Your life is in danger a lot of times. You just know you want to make it home to your wife and kids safely. I get that. And it takes compassion and that knowledge for the police officer to realize, hey, this is a human being I'm dealing with here. They probably are a good person. They probably want to get home to their wife and kids too. Let me do my job, but let's not, you know, overstep my boundaries as well too. It's such a hard subject to approach. It's so many layers So I want to get back to, you were talking about being a king, being a queen, you know, and we talked about how people are raised in a certain environment that might not be very positive, right? And so you know, like what you said, you had your run-in with the police, you might have not come from the best environment You know, I grew up in the projects as well, too. When my family first came here, we settled in the projects in Denver, Colorado. And so it's not a great environment. It's not very positive. You know, how does somebody who's in that environment get out of it like you? You know, not some people make it out like you, and not everyone is able to see that, hey, you know, I have a choice here. How does somebody do that?
Well, when I tell you, and this goes back to the martial arts industry, and this goes back to leaders. God saved a man like me through the hell I've been through, so you can use me as an ambassador to talk to a kid like that. See, here's the problem. You know, the one thing I had to recognize when I was in jail, and this is the answer to the question to keep this conversation going on. When I was in jail, I had to realize that, hold up, okay, everybody say that we dumb, we stupid, we never gonna amount to anything, but they don't know me. Everybody say that you're gonna take your black belt or you a guardian angel and you're gonna come to an inner city community and you're gonna stop crime. Well, that ain't happening, because that, I don't care how much martial arts you know. And even Rickson Gracie said it. He said, look, the last place I wanna go and try to do jiu-jitsu in is in South Central. That's a whole nother, that's like being in the Vietnam War and trying to like go out there and, you know, you understand what I'm saying? That's just, but I think what people don't get, I need you to stop for a minute and understand this. God saved me out of that pits of hell. I was at the lowest. I didn't see the highest and the lowest in an environment that was set up for me to fail. Not because the people in the environment, but it was because of other things in that environment. Remember, you just said it, to learn martial arts, you went to someone that was skilled and had the experience and the wisdom to teach you that particular style, correct? Mm-hmm. So in order to help educate them children, you should be going to someone that represents that experience like me. I'm here to say, let's unite. Let me go in and take the blueprint. I'm not teaching martial arts. Why is it, and this got to go to the leaders and the parents first. Why is it that when I learn Kung Fu, I learn the culture of Kung Fu? Why is it when I learn Silat, I learn the culture of Silat? Why is it that in order to fix them kids, you're not letting someone go back that can identify with the culture that they come from? That's the problem. You don't understand the culture. You can't force what you think it should be on a kid that got to go home and go to sleep where somebody might be getting drunk or high off of crack cocaine. You said it's going to be okay. Just say no. You don't identify with that. You can help that. But first of all, you can't be on the outside sending them back to that environment. So what I got to get a kid to do, and that's the reason why I do what I do. I create Point MMA. It's not to sell Point MMA to nobody. I'm creating an expression of martial arts that registered as being cool and hip to that kid where he can feel like, okay, I'm feeling this, man. I'm doing this. I'm going to do this. And then I can feed him an understanding of, bruh, don't let them take you off your goal, man. I'm telling you, I was there. I had nobody that agreed with me. I know every time you go to this dojo or every time you go to the playground and practice, you got all your friends trying to tell you, no, man, let's get money. You got some girl that might be trying to get you off point, or some girl got some guy trying to get them off point. You got your own parents where you got to grow up early. You probably got family members just telling you go get money on the street. So if you don't understand that, you can keep on doing all the external stuff that you want until you deal with the internal. You can't take a art. You can't take Kung Fu and make it work in the hood. The hood had to make Kung Fu adaptable to the hood. Every form of martial arts that went to them inner cities became an expression of the city, not the other way around. So you got to unite. You got to take the people, just like you're going to take, you know, you want to learn Italian fighting, you can learn Italian culture. You got to learn the culture. I am a product of that culture. Did I manifest beyond that? Yes. Have I set principles and steps for a kid to be able to learn and learn how to take a stand and be and learn to love themselves? Regardless of what, they still got to go through that war zone when they go home, when they go to school. But you got to talk to them. You, I got the reason why I made so many bad mistakes because nobody understood my culture. And still to this day, when I go and talk to people, you still say, oh yeah, Bam, I understand. Yeah, we'll try to help Bam. So when you say you're trying to help some kid is dying, listen to me, listen to what I'm saying. When I have a meeting with you to tell you to get behind and support what we're doing, that comes from and has been proven, not just in the inner city, but in jail where I went to jail and never got in one fight. And I became a manifestation of the good. So guess what? You got to assist me in that process. All right, guys, I'm sorry, but guess what? Where I come from, you don't stay married because you don't think about getting married, but I done broke the cycle. I'm a married man. I want to stay married, so I got to listen to my wife. Nobody's more important than my wife, Kimber Johnson. You understand what I'm saying? But yeah, man, I mean, you know, in closing, we can fix this problem. It ain't just going to take me. I created, I mean, once again, you know, one out of 100. God told me in jail, he said, only one of y'all going to make it. That was 35 years ago. Everything I do each and every day, and I think you know I'm consistent with that. When you see my posts, I'm all about the kids. All I'm asking people to do, come together, work with me. I mean, let's put the resources together. Let's get behind a program. I'm not trying to do MMA. I'm doing a program that represents the culture of that I came up in that all these kids are fighting. I just happen to use the tools of martial arts to help them because that's what I learned. That's what I had to teach myself, which is no different than everybody else. But the problem is, and I hate to say it, maybe it's because I'm on third base in the first car. Remember that?
Yep.
Okay. So I said, me and Nick are not supporting what I'm doing because I'm in third place. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yep.
If I have the solution to the problem, don't you think they should be supporting the problem? I mean, the solution?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So that's what we do. You got to get behind something. That's what I spent all my time with doing in jail. I wanted to make sure I come home and I can be a solution for these kids. They don't have to ever go down the path that I went down. I just need people to support what we're doing. You ain't got to give me nothing. Because what we learn on the street is that we collaborate, we work together. I guarantee there's going to be a return on your investment. And what that investment is, saving another kid's life. If you about that, then support what I do. If not, it's good. Just get out my way. Don't waste my time. I know what to do. I'm a product of it, man. 35 years. And just for the day, I'm still living it. I got everything that they said a young black man wouldn't have. A wife, kids, a home. Hey, I guess I'm known in martial arts. Maybe I done accomplished something in martial arts that makes me a respectable martial artist or role model for other people. I don't know. You tell me. Talk to me.
Oh, no. Definitely, you know, a lot of people know your name in the martial arts circles. So you've done a great job there. That's for sure. You know, I want to talk about your Point MMA. That sounds like a terrific organization to be a part of and to, do you have stuff over on the West Coast?
No, you're going to be our first licensee on the West Coast. That's why you just asked me about it, right?
Hey man, yes, I want to look into that. I think that's a great idea too. You know, a lot of people, they look at MMA and they just think cage fighting and broken noses and whatnot. But I like the point fighting approach because there's a lot of skill sets that can be taken over from MMA in a safer environment. And I like that approach.
So let's think about it. When you come up in the inner city, when Bruce Lee was around, we made martial arts, remember? When Chinese Connection came out, there was not many dojos in the inner cities, let alone the suburbs. Remember, martial art dojos didn't become a popular thing until after the Karate Kid. Am I making sense here? Are you following me?
Yep.
All right. So in the early days, most people was just teaching themselves martial arts. We were making it up, you know, like basketball and baseball, creative kids making up your own. I'm just one kid that held on to making up what I did. It's like hip hop. The same time, let's remember this analogy, all right? The same time hip-hop was a form of expression for people in that environment, martial arts was a part of that. Look at the correlation of martial arts and hip hop. It was all a way for us to express ourselves. They were all working hand in hand. So even the fighting, during those times, we didn't know no kata. So what we did, we just fought all day. We just fought all day. And back then, there was nobody that was better than nobody, because you in a jungle of warriors. There is no one outstanding warrior. You might have one moment of outstanding, but you ain't going to consistently be beating up another warrior, because he a warrior. He going to come back with a strategy to make sure he beats you that day. And that, and when we really think about it, that's the heart of combat. You win one day, and the guy that you defeated come back the next day is a give and take type of relationship. So through that sort of technical excellence and that under that pressure in those inner cities, I learned how to spar really good. We learned how to spar in a controlled manner. You was not trying to take, come on, let's go back. Let's revisit this, because I want us to picture this. You're in the inner city with no equipment in the 70s. You're sparring with a guy and you're trying to knock his head off who's mad just like you. So do you think you end up beating them up, or do you think it turns into a real street fight while y'all trying to kill each other? What happens?
Everything escalates.
So you see what I'm saying? Point MMA is that, is to prevent escalation for injury, because the sparring process becomes fun and enjoyable. And in order, it's like playing basketball. During those times, you had to be good with technique. If I hit you with a good round kick, I got some respect. It's like, oh, okay, all right, good one, bam, I'm coming back at you. Well, what I realized that somewhere along the way, when martial arts had became so commercial during that time of Karate Kid, you can attest to it. People couldn't spar. We never had a sparring curriculum. You bowed in and he said, fight. Am I correct?
Yep.
You never learned how to spar. If you survived them beatdown matches, you got good with fighting, right or wrong?
Well, you learn from people scoring on you. You go, I should try that.
Yeah, you know, and some people didn't make it. That's why only strong survived during those times. Mm-hmm. So after going through all that and succeeding and realizing me being kung fu in karate, remember kung fu people, they used to say you couldn't fight at that time, kung fu people, because most people was making up kung fu. You know, they were, you go to tournaments and you see, you know, he was making it up. He didn't really know what he was doing. So when he went out there, he started sparring. He was doing Bruce Lee's Chinese Connection, or, you know what I'm saying? He got all beat up, man, you know? So yeah. They gave Kung Fu a bad name. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when I got in Kung Fu, remember, the art don't make the individual make the art. Am I correct?
That's correct.
So you were bringing the kid from Baltimore into Kung Fu to express a level of Kung Fu that never been expressed before. So that made me a better at sparring. It made me better at self-defense. It made me better at just like evaluating myself and expressing myself. And I had to use martial arts to get out the hood. I had to change that environment. So it was a different approach for me. I had to get my mom off of welfare. I needed a better life. I didn't always want to live in a project. So through that evolution and growing and becoming known in the martial arts, as time goes on to early times when UFC started like really coming in. Why? Because think about it. I'm just going to say this while we talking. At one time, there was a TV show called WMAC Masters. Remember the show?
Oh, yeah. I used to watch it every Saturday morning. Right after all right. And Friends.
See, so everybody loved WMAC Masters. Mm-hmm. But because of our industry, here was a Hollywood company coming in and trying to get the martial art community to come together and be a part of the 800 number. Do you remember at the end of the TV show, there was always an 800 number to become a WMAC Master? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That was historical. But guess what? None of the martial art leaders wanted to get behind something that could expose the dynamics of martial arts into a more of a philosophy, character building, martial arts manner. They boycotted, they went against, they said, this ain't real, this is phony. Everybody on the show was real martial artists. It was like WWE. It was entertaining. So guess what happened? When WMAC Masters went off the air, what came on air? UFC. Mm. So UFC fulfilled a void that the martial arts industry destroyed. So who would ever think that you would be watching TV where people are being beat down into a pulp and bleeding all over the place? I mean, think about that. We see people getting their faces reconstructed. Yeah. You ain't gonna tell me if Muhammad Ali got so much damage to him through boxing with gloves on that you're not gonna see some hell of a damage to UFC fighters in the near future. Am I correct?
That's correct, yep.
So I'm saying, okay, the practicality of it is good. I love it. I love the realism, because when you come up in the street, you better know how to box, wrestle, and use a weapon. That's it. You know, you got to know how to fight on the ground and all that. That's a part of the hood. It ain't nothing new. Most guys were wrestlers and boxers. You know, come on, let's, karate was for, not wrestling and boxing. And you knew that once a wrestler got wind of how to counter jiu-jitsu, wrestlers and boxers was going to control the majority of the sport. And what is it? Wrestling and boxing is controlling the majority of the sport now. Yep. So I said, hold up. How can we evolve? Because point fighting is effective if you teach it right. Mm-hmm. It's technique. If you know, most fights are won through technique. So that's when me and my wife said, hold up. We don't want our younger kids to go through this type of insane sparring. We came up beating people up. Come on, man. A lot of times we had sparring matches, and you ain't going to tell me I don't have a concussion, or some people didn't get concussions. We were killing each other. So we had to change the dynamics, and that's when we came up with the first ever, I don't care what nobody say, it's the first ever sparring curriculum from intro to black belt called Point MMA that blends together all of our experiences from boxing, wrestling. I just studied Jeet Kune Do. I mean, I just studied Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It blends together all these different ranges of sparring, even acrobats. UFC said that nobody would never knock somebody out with a spin hook kick. Come on now, look at what they're doing now. You know, people that got knocked out with cartwheel kicks, you know? So we wanted to, once again, like martial arts was when it first started, we wanted to give the student the freedom to learn the whole, let's think, we're going to a Chinese restaurant. I want to give them the whole buffet and then let them choose what food they like on the buffet table and stick to that. But I'm not going to give you the food that I think is best for you. I'm going to give you the whole buffet. And then you make the choice and that becomes your expression. So Point MMA is really flag football of the MMA sport. I mean, it's growing. It's there for anybody. It has a licensing component where you can bring it into your school. It has a community component. And most importantly, is a virtual element. I mean, it is the wave of the future. You know, anybody that wants to be a part of it, like you, which I know you're going to become a licensee along with coming to teach, you know, but you're still going to be a part. You're going to represent Point MMA on the West Coast. Talk to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I want to look into it. I think this is an exciting thing. And, you know, I've got to get going. I've got another meeting. Why don't we put it on pause? You know, there's still a lot of other issues I'd love to talk about and discuss, because there's so many layers to what we were talking about. But thank you. I'm honored to hang out with you, to chat with you, to have a little platform to talk about some of these issues that, you know, nobody wants to talk about. And I still think maybe there's still some of this segregation in the martial arts, a little bit of some lingering effects that people haven't talked about yet. And I'd love to finish it up with you another time, but I got to get going. Thank you again, Master Johnson. It's awesome hanging out with you.
All right, well, thank you. And let's end with a positive, just saying that we're going to fix whatever's wrong. We can fix it by uniting and working together, right?
Absolutely.
All right, be blessed.
All right, take care, all brother.
Sai Jin.